Do not let your hearts be troubled or afraid. Dear brothers and sisters, the Holy Spirit is with you.
Searches for his living soul, searches places that he don't wanna go, looks for love and for hope. He finds a world that's abandoned them both. Yeah. All the lies tell us just to set you free. What we need is that love, the love that comforts from heaven above.
Hi, I'm Kathleen McCarthy, and you're listening to What the World Needs Now, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. I invite you to join me in this hour of God's healing power. Call and join us in conversation and prayer. Remember, what the world needs now is God, and God is love. Well, welcome once again to What the World Needs Now, and what the world needs now is God, and God is love. I want to praise and thank God for this opportunity to be the voice to go out behind this microphone, to continue to preach the gospel of life in a culture of death, to continue to teach the true teachings of the church's magisterium, because we are in one accord, and that the truth might go out, and he alone, Jesus Christ, is alone the way, the truth, and the life. We're having a guest today who wrote a powerful book, and it's called Forced Exit. It's about euthanasia, assisted suicide, and the new duty, quote, to die. It's by Wesley J. Smith, and it is a fascinating book. And you see in this culture of death how literally the deceit, the silver tongue of the enemy sounds great, sounds inviting, the words sound fuzzy and warm and loving, and yet is undergirded with death, and to move people to feel that euthanasia in some way or some crazy way is acceptable, or assisted suicide is acceptable, when in fact there is no acceptable reason. And so we have him on the phone right now. I just want to remind everybody, today is the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima. And as you know, she appeared in 1917 to three little Portuguese children. And of course, it was always referred to as Our Lady of Fatima after that. We are blessed to have those apparitions and the message behind them. And we are blessed to have Our Lady of Fatima. And rather than hold our guest on the line, we're going to go into talking about forced exit. Hello, Mr. Smith. How are you?
Fine. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I am very interested in your book. I think it's profound. And I think for the average person, especially in this culture of death today, we really don't have any idea of the culture of death that underlies the beautiful portrayal of this forced exit, if you will. And so I'm blessed to have you on today.
Well, thank you very much. You know, the book first came out in 1997, and it's now in its third version, because I've had to keep it updated.
Right.
So much is continuing to happen in this field, and we really are moving towards not only assisted suicide for the terminally ill, which is wrong in and of itself, but if you pay any attention to what's happening here and around the world, the idea of terminal illness as being the criteria for permitting legalized assisted suicide is frankly a fantasy. Because, for example, just in Switzerland, where assisted suicide is legal and a doctor doesn't even have to be involved in it in the sense of doing the actual assisting, which makes sense because killing is not a medical treatment, the Swiss Supreme Court created a constitutional right to assisted suicide for the mentally ill. And that has been literally supported enthusiastically by some bioethicists here in the United States. Writing in the Hastings Center report, a bioethicist named Jacob Apple said that we should go that route because this idea of a terminal illness limitation is wrong. And I say the Hastings Center report because that is the world's most prestigious and important bioethics journal, the most influential bioethics journal. And so when it's published in that journal, you know that the issue is very much up for discussion, and eventually what gets discussed in bioethics often gets implemented in hospitals and medical clinics around the country.
You know, Mr. Wesley, one thing I really also noticed as I was, you know, going through your book, the healthcare professionals, they're disturbed about this as in many ways themselves.
Of course. I mean, how would you like to have to be asked to have somebody kill you?
Exactly. Exactly. And today, I mean, in the culture of death, we think of the horrific abortion rate today. We think of even infanticide, the horrificness of it all. And yet, assisted suicide, euthanasia, the numbers on those are staggering as well. I was shocked when I read your book.
Well, it's very interesting. I was not involved in the original abortion discussion back in the 60s and 70s, but as I read the history of it, pro-lifers were saying, listen, if you start permitting abortion, it's going to lead directly to euthanasia and assisted suicide. And the people who were against the pro-lifers were saying, oh, that's just alarmism. Well, now, as a matter of routine, you see people on the pro-assisted suicide side saying, well, what about choice don't you understand? And there is a direct connection from the argument from the pro-assisted suicide folks to the abortion issue. Now, there are people who are against abortion, who are pro-abortion rights, who are against assisted suicide. It's not a one-to-one situation, and I have always argued that if pro-lifers want to say that, well, in order to be against assisted suicide, you also have to be against abortion, you won't have no abortion and no assisted suicide. You'll have both.
Right.
Because right now the pro-life movement does not have the political power. That's pretty clear looking around to control events. But in coalition with people who may disagree about abortion, we have been able to stop assisted suicide in its tracks until last year after the passage in Oregon. And that coalition is made up of pro-lifers, the Catholic Church, who are very much against assisted suicide. But on the non-pro-life side, you have disability rights advocates who tend to be very liberal politically. They tend to be not pro-life on abortion, and they tend to be very secular. But they are some of the foremost opponents of assisted suicide because they see that they are the targets.
Absolutely.
And so they have made a huge difference in holding back this agenda. You also see the medical professional organizations like the American Medical Association,
right.
Almost all, if not all, state medical organizations against assisted suicide. And I don't know of any AMA or state medical association that's pro-life in that sense. And also advocates for the poor and this kind of thing. So by reaching across that bitter divide over abortion and agreeing, okay, on that issue we can agree to disagree, but let's work together against assisted suicide, we've actually been able to slow down that juggernaut politically. For example, where I live in California, we've had protracted struggles over the last 4 years to stop assisted suicide, and we almost lost it. In fact, I testified in an hour-and-a-half hearing 3 years ago at a Judiciary Committee hearing, and it was the hardest thing in terms of just the sheer energy expended because, you know, you could feel the weight of the entire state ready to go for assisted suicide in that hearing. And if California goes, I mean, much of the nation will go.
Right.
And we were, not just me, but the whole bunch of us, and the Catholic Church was this person who made the decision to vote no for it. It was a Democrat who was the head of the Judiciary Committee. He also got counseling from his cardinal. But he voted no, and it stopped it. It's a very serious situation right now. And last year, in 2008, we saw the beginning of a cracking in that wall, if you will, that has held for 13 years, because Washington State voted to legalize assisted suicide based on a hugely deceptive campaign, but very well financed. The proponents outspent the opponents of assisted suicide by 4-1. And the opponents had only about $1 million total, and they lost 58-42%. Now, that really put the wind in the sails of the euthanasia movement.
Mm.
And then in Montana, perhaps even more alarmingly, a judge imposed a constitutional right in the state of Montana to assisted suicide, calling the, quote, right to die a fundamental right. Now, that's the first time I have ever seen a advocacy slogan, the right to die or death with dignity, become
a
constitutional principle.
It's frightening.
It's very frightening, and there are no guidelines over this in Montana, except for the court's ruling, which is in effect, even though it's been appealed to the Montana Supreme Court. And the people who the Compassion and Choices, they used to call themselves the Hemlock Society,
mm-hmm.
but to show you that the euthanasia movement, it moves on euphemisms, gooey euphemisms. So they changed the name to Compassion and Choices,
yeah.
Right, so that people will think well of them. Well, they wrote the Oregon law and bragged about the so-called guidelines to protect against abuse. But as soon as Montana created a constitutional right to assisted suicide, you saw their lawyer, Catherine Tucker, saying, no guidelines here, this is a constitutional right. Because here's the dirty little secret. In the end, assisted suicide is about death on demand. And I think you saw in my book, Forced Exit, how I showed that very meticulously and carefully. Because what are the ideological principles that underlie the assisted suicide movement, euthanasia movement? The first is radical individualism. I own my body. It's my body. I can die if I want to. Former governor of Washington, Booth Gardner, who put hundreds and hundreds of thousands of his own money into the Washington initiative that passed, said, my body, my life, my choice, my death, me, right?
Right.
And sometimes the euthanasia people will call it the ultimate civil liberty, the right to choose the time, place, and manner of one's own death. The second weight-bearing pillar of assisted suicide is that killing is an acceptable answer to the problems of human suffering. Once you accept those two premises, that I own my body, I have the right to choose the time, manner, and place of my death as the ultimate civil liberty, which basically is what the Montana judge found, even though she mentioned terminal illness, but her language was so expansive, there's no reason to limit it to terminal illness.
Mm.
And once you say that killing is an acceptable answer to human suffering, well, what does being terminally ill have to do with it? There are a lot of people who suffer far longer and far more severely than people who are dying. And if killing is an answering to the suffering of people suffering shorter periods of time and less amounts of suffering, why wouldn't it be also available to these folks? And of course it would be.
Sure, it'd be less costly for one thing.
Oh, well, then you get into the issue of cost containment. You take a look at what's happening now with this idea of national health insurance or national health care.
Yep, I'm scared the heck out of
that. The Obama administration is beginning the process of setting up a utilitarian bioethics board which will control what kind of health care can be provided and what won't be provided based on money and quality of life
That's
judgments.
That's right. Their quality.
Suicide becomes the cheapest form of, quote, medical treatment you can imagine. It costs about $100 to make somebody dead in assisted suicide. It could cost $100,000 or $200,000 to make them so they don't want assisted suicide. Can you imagine, if we all have to start worrying about cost containment, what the force of gravity will be?
Absolutely. You mentioned something striking as you just said it. when you said, you know, we got into the cost and the magnitude of that escalating cost, when we think about that with a long-term illness, it is staggering and it's frightening. But also, I mean, when you think about it, it almost, how can I say it, for the doctors today with medical practice and so forth and so on, there are so many deaths just through that. It'd be sort of easy then to do away with someone under one of those medical malpractice suits.
Well, and I think one of the big fights is going to be actually to protect doctors who want to practice Hippocratic medicine. If you think about how medicine was practiced 50 years ago under the Hippocratic Oath, doctors were ethically prohibited, based on the Hippocratic Oath, from performing abortions.
Yes.
They were ethically prohibited, this would be all doctors, from assisting in suicide.
Yes.
We now have a situation in which the Hippocratic Oath has been changed, and doctors no longer take the original oath.
Is that so?
Oh, that's right. It may be 5 or 10% at most of doctors today take the original Hippocratic Oath, or the Hippocratic Oath with the patient protective principles in it. They now take these kinds of watered-down oaths that, you know, talk about protecting patient privacy and so forth, but have done away with the abortion and assisted suicide issues because, you know, now those things are legal. What is health care has been shifted. Health care is being changed. Medicine is being changed. The purposes of medicine are being changed. But what do you do about those doctors who say, listen, I got into medicine to save lives, not take it? You're going to have a way for them to say no to these procedures if they're legalized. And, of course, abortion is legal. Assisted suicide is legal in a couple of states. You've got the issue of embryonic stem cell research. What if those medicines come online?
Right.
Are you going to force doctors to give people embryonic stem cell medicines, even though the doctors will know that that came from destroying human embryos? What if fetal farming comes on board, which is already being talked about?
Exactly.
That is creating cloned embryos, putting them in an artificial womb, gestating them for 6 weeks, and using the tissues from a six-week-old embryo or an eight-week-old or a 10-week-old fetus for organ transplants, for example. Studies like that are being done in animals right now. Are doctors going to be able to say no to using to clone fetal farming, turning human beings into natural resources?
Hmm.
And that brings up the conscience clause issue.
Exactly.
Where President Bush, at the end of his term, put together, through the Health and Human Services Department, a conscience clause that said, listen, no doctor or other health care professional, this would include nurses, pharmacists, so forth, can be punished in their job by any institution that receives federal support because they refuse to participate in a procedure based on a moral or religious dissent. You saw this. You could hear the screaming around the world from that.
Yes.
And right now, Barack Obama's administration is seeking to revoke that conscience clause. Why is that? Because the culture of death brooks no dissent. What you're going to see happening, and we can go to Washington State right now, after passage of this bill, Catholic hospitals, for example, under the Providence healthcare system, and other hospitals and institutions said, we are not going to allow assisted suicide on our premises, which is permitted under the Washington law. And you're already beginning to see pressure in the media and by others to say, well, people have been given the right to assisted suicide, but they can't access it because doctors won't do it. You're beginning to see the campaign to force doctors to participate either actively in assisted suicide or to be complicit in it by referring to a doctor who the original doctor knows would participate.
Mm.
And people would say, oh, well, they'd never do that. Well, they do that right now in Australia on abortion. The province of Victoria, the state of Victoria in Australia, has a law that permits abortion through the ninth month that it just passed.
Oh, my gosh.
And that if a patient goes to a doctor and says, I want an abortion, either that doctor has to do it, or if the doctor doesn't wish to do it, that doctor has to find a doctor for the patient who will. Now, that forces every doctor in Victoria, Australia, to theoretically be complicit in the taking of a human life. The same thing kind of law has been proposed in California with regard to assisted suicide, a form of assisted suicide, and it didn't pass. Another bill in California would have required California Catholic nursing homes, as an example, to permit assisted suicide on premises. That didn't pass. But this is the future, because once these things become permitted, then they start to become mandatory. And you've seen the professional association that represents the obstetricians and gynecologists.
Yes.
Their professional ethical statement is that all obstetrician gynecologists should either do abortions or should refer to somebody who will if you don't want to. And we'll see the same thing with assisted suicide, and if embryonic stem cell research ever becomes widely available, I think you'll see that, and fetal farming and all of this kind of thing, infanticide, et cetera, unless you get the conscience clauses, which are being resisted tooth and tongue because the culture of death brooks no dissent.
It is a terrible, terrible time. And, you know, I say time and time again, this is a very pro-life Catholic radio program, Christian radio program, from the womb to the tomb, natural death. And yet people do not realize the statistics and the slippery slope we have been on, very deceitfully so, but the slope is, I mean, it's coming faster and faster, as you said, with this new healthcare reform. Will they get a chance to read that? You know, I mean, we just passed a tremendous stimulus package that nobody even had a chance to read. What are the dangers of that?
Yeah. The same thing will happen, and consider this. Healthcare rationing will be part of any national healthcare system. It has to be because of the cost.
That's right.
If you have healthcare rationing, what you are saying, and it's going to apply against the most expensive patients, so what you're going to be saying to the frail elderly, what you're going to be saying to people with very serious disabilities, particularly cognitive impairments or developmental disabilities, what you're going to be saying to people who have terminal conditions, is that your quality of life is not sufficient for us to spend the public's money on. And that, in essence, creates a duty to die. And if you don't think that that is really already part of this game plan, refer you to Oregon. In Oregon, that state has legalized assisted suicide. It is also the only state that has an explicit rationing plan under Medicaid, that is, the health insurance for the poor. And under the Health Insurance for the Poor Medicaid rationing scheme, if somebody gets recurrent cancer and is not expected to live for 5 years, even with chemotherapy, that chemotherapy can be denied the patient based on rationing principles. Two patients last summer had this occur to them, one woman with lung cancer and a man with prostate cancer. And they both asked for this chemo so that their lives could be extended, even though it was not expected to allow them to live for 5 years. The state of Oregon's Medicaid said, no, you cannot have the chemotherapy because we don't cover it because it's rationed. It then also said in the letter, however, we will pay for your assisted suicide if you would like. And the woman, Barbara Wagner was her name, who got this letter, was so appalled she went to the media. And she said, they're saying my life isn't worth paying for, but my death is.
Mm.
That's the future of this entire country if the current trend for nationalized health insurance and the culture of death continues, because it's going to be about the money, and it's going to be about judging whether somebody has a life worth living based on so-called quality of life determinations. And it's really going to be open season on the most weak and vulnerable unless we say, no, not on our watch. You're not going to let that happen. We treat everybody in this country equally. Nobody has a greater moral right to live than anybody else. It's going to take a lot of effort and a lot of work, but right now all I'm seeing are a bunch of people saying, oh, whatever, we can't stop it. And if that's how people decide to continue to think, we've had this financial problem, so we have to let Obama do what he wants, well, we're going to end up with the consequences, aren't we?
Absolutely. And it goes back to the old adage, you didn't stand up for all these things, and finally in the end they came for us, and there was nobody left to protest.
And the interesting thing is that the elites who are pushing this, the liberal elites, it won't apply to them. Just like, for example, global warming, whether it exists or not, Al Gore says we all have to change our lifestyles, but he has a big mansion and he flies on private jets. That's
right.
How it works.
I agree. And, you know, Wesley, also, I think one of the amazing things is with this new reform health care, and I can't even call it health care in good conscience, but so be it. All those politicians, all those, the elite, if you will, President Obama included, and every president and everybody in politics, they have the greatest and the finest health care, and we're paying for their health care.
Yeah, and they're not going to get rationed. You can bet that.
Exactly. Yeah. How does, how in the world can people not realize what's taking place here? I
think it gets into several issues. First, I think people are really, there's just so much information overload right now.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, you know, the economy melting down. You've got the problem of terrorist attacks. You've got, you know, the president trying to keep the banks going. You've got this health care stuff is all very arcane. You know, a lot of what we've been talking about is very complicated and very arcane, and people's eyes kind of glaze over. Then you have all of the competition from the entertainment, from the gossip, from the soap operas,
mm-hmm.
you know, the and then you have stories like the Miss USA runner-up, who's you know, I'm not castigating any aspersions on her at all, but the amount of ink that woman has received over something that is not as important as what we're talking about,
right.
but is perhaps more interesting and easier to understand,
mm.
Demonstrates a failure, I think, of media to do its job to inform people. And you have all of these, you have much of the media falling down on the job. It's journalistic malpractice.
Right.
They are not going to provide a challenge to President Obama. And that's just how it is. And it's up to alternative media, such as your show, to at least alert people that there's a problem here and that something had better be done very quickly. And we still are a free democratic society. And if people stand up and say, wait a second, I don't want assisted suicide. I don't want health care rationing. It can be stopped. But I have to say, in Washington State, this is a Catholic program, the Catholic vote for assisted suicide actually was greater for than against.
Yeah, God have mercy. I read that myself.
So you know, when the Catholic members of the Catholic Church, and I'm not speaking for the Catholic Church, and I wouldn't expect to, but assisted suicide is clearly against the moral teaching of the Catholic Church.
It completely is. And these are Catholics in name only in a lot of instances.
Well, you know, but if you can't get Catholics to vote to protect the sanctity and equality of human life, I'm not sure who's going to.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. Yesterday, Wesley, I just had a program on, and we did it on a lot of life issues, even like same-sex marriage and abortion issue and all of those things. And one of the things I brought up is the suicide rate in young people today.
Yeah.
They have a sense of hopelessness. Well, that's a vulnerability that as they go on in life, that the people that push the euthanasia agenda and assisted suicide, these are the kind of young people that will be you know, easy access for these groups.
Well, you've already seen victims in that regard. There are a lot of books published, not a lot, but there are some books, how to commit suicide. There are techniques taught over the internet on how to commit suicide.
Right.
And you have found these books. For example, there's a book called Final Exit by Derek Humphrey, who founded the Hemlock Society. And his work has been found at the next to the dead bodies of teenagers who killed themselves.
That's right.
And he's totally unrepentant. And, you know, he shrugs his shoulders. There's a assisted suicide advocate named Philip Nitsky from Australia who has urged that troubled teens have access to assisted suicide because anybody who wants to die should be allowed to die. As I said, in Switzerland now, there's a right to assisted suicide for the mentally ill. In the Netherlands, because of their euthanasia policy, they are now engaging in infanticide. Babies are killed because they're born with serious birth defects. I mean, in World War II, killing disabled babies was considered a crime against humanity.
Right.
It's now considered compassion.
Amazing, and the vocabulary they use today.
Thing to ponder and to consider where we're heading.
Wesley, we have to take a break. Please hold. I'm going to open up the lines. Would you be so kind to take questions?
Sure, I'll be happy to.
Okay, my brothers and sisters, take this number down, 610-527-2906. What an interesting topic today. It affects every single one of us. Let's get some input and let's get some answers to our questions. 610-527-2906. Anywhere else in the United States, 1-888-343-2484. We'll be right back.
Dear friends, in their 2007 statement, Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship, the bishops of the United States reaffirmed seven principles of Catholic social teaching as key elements not only for our participation in political life, but for our daily lives as well. First among these principles is the right to life. This is foundational to a moral society and is the compass that should guide our decisions and actions. This most basic of all human rights helps us to understand how best to respond to the most vulnerable among us. As Catholics, we are called to bring the compassion of Jesus Christ to those who are broken at every stage and in every condition of life. With God's grace, we will be able to see the face of Christ reflected in each of our brothers and sisters and to bring healing and justice to our world. May God bless you all.
Hi, this is Kathleen McCarthy, president of In His Sign Network. I'd like to invite you to join us at In His Sign Network as we present our second annual healing retreat at the beautiful Malvern Retreat House in Malvern, Pennsylvania. The healing retreat will be held the weekend after Memorial Day weekend. It'll be on May 29th and concluding on Pentecost Sunday, the 31st. In the words of God in the scriptures, we're invited to come away to a quiet place. He also tells us to be still and know that He is God. He is the good news. In Luke chapter 8, we hear Jesus ask His disciples, "Who touched me?" And they responded, "Lord, the crowd is large and pressing in on you." Finally, a woman steps forth and falls down before Him. She explains why she touched Him and how she was healed immediately. Jesus responded, "Daughter, your faith has saved you. Go in peace." Let us too reach out and touch Jesus and experience His healing love, His healing power. Come on the weekend after Memorial Day weekend and expect a miracle. Don't be left out. Register early by calling Malvern Retreat House at 610-644-0400, or better yet, you can register right online at malvernretreat.com. The cost is $210 per person, which includes all the conferences, three delicious meals a day, and your lodging. There is special pricing for married couples as well as families. The conferences are: my own will be on inner healing and forgiveness, and Father Bill Halpings will be spiritual warfare and deliverance. Father John McFadden's will be generational healing. We encourage you to bring all the pictures of your loved ones to be placed on the altar to be offered at every Mass daily, as well as the Eucharistic generational healing service on Saturday evening. As we reach out to touch the Lord, we await these words: "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." May we all experience the healing power of the Lord, and may His Spirit pour out upon all of us as we gather in faith and in hope at Malvern Retreat House on May 29th through the 31st. God bless you. Well, welcome to What the World Needs Now, in case you just tuned in. And if you're on your way home, heading into your house, remember this goes out globally, worldwide. Just turn on your computer, www.inhissign.com, and hit listen to live radio. Today we have a most interesting guest. His name is Wesley J. Smith, and he has written Forced Exit, and it's on euthanasia, assisted suicide, and the new duty to die, quote. However, one thing that I think is profound that we just began to get into, and something that's constantly hit across this radio station, is one of the most important things about any healthcare is where people stand when it comes to life from the womb to the tomb. And the Catholic voice, I mean, the Catholic people who really believe in the teachings of the church, or really even take the religiosity out of it and just say, I want to live. I want to be able to have everything afforded to me that would help my life. And yet one of the largest voice is so silent. And Mr. Smith just talked about that. If Catholics would get together and band together, what a powerful voice we would make for the dignity and life of every person. You just heard Cardinal Justin Regali talk about the dignity of every single person, especially the most vulnerable among us, which are the people that are a challenge in so many ways, disabled in so many ways, and especially the unborn in the womb. So that's what we're talking about today. Please give a call, 610-527-2906. Or again, you can call anywhere outside the area, 1-888-343-2484. Thank you so much for being so patient, Wesley. I really appreciate it. And I just want to give a plug to this book. It's profound, and many of us today aren't even aware of the statistics that come forth in this book. And I would advise you to get a copy of this book. And you know, all my listeners out there, you know that I don't hit a book really heavy ever. This book, Forced Exit, by Wesley J. Smith, will be so informative to you that maybe it would stir up within all of us the grace to step out in faith and take a stand on these issues. You can call here. We'll get the book to you, or you can, Wesley, if you have a website, or you can tell us where we can purchase that book, that would be great.
I appreciate your very kind words. The best place, I think, to get the book is Amazon.com, because it has a good discount. So just go into Amazon.com and type in Wesley J. Smith under books, and that book and my other books will come up. I wrote a book called Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America.
I remember that.
Which gets into the wider picture of bioethics and the new duty to die and feudal care theory, for example, forcing people off wanted medical treatment based on quality of life judgments, some of the organ donation issues and so forth, and also Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World, which gets into the stem cell issues, cloning, and so forth. So Amazon.com is probably best for that.
Okay.
I also think people would be, if they're interested in these issues, every day just come to my blog, WesleyJSmith.com, WesleyJSmith.com, in which I basically plug in stories that are happening every day from around the world on these and other issues. I am basically involved in defending what I call human exceptionalism, that is the sheer importance of being human, the sheer moral importance of being human based simply on being human. What a lot of people don't understand, because it isn't really dealt with specifically in the media, and certainly not on television, is that there are a lot of forces trying to say that being human is not a morally relevant category, and that they want the idea of being human as having importance to be taken out and put in other agendas. For example, Peter Singer of Princeton University says that being human is not what matters. What matters is being a person, which is not the same thing as being human.
That's
as,
right.
As it, most people might think. It is having sufficient mental capacity to qualify for the category. animal rights activists, and I'm not talking about animal welfare and SPCA types, but animal rights, like People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, say that humans and animals are morally equal because what makes one morally worthy is the ability to suffer or to feel pain or to have sentience. So you see that there is a and in the neo-Darwinistic world, they're beginning to say that, well, since we all came out of the same primordial ooze in terms of evolution, that the very concept of species distinctions are a fiction, and that we should get over it and realize we're just part of the flora and fauna. And this has very bad ramifications, because if being human is not what makes life important, at least to have the most importance, because, of course, you know, the life of animals is important, too, but to have the most importance, then there's no way to have universal human rights.
That's right.
Because unless it's just being human is what gives you your rights, then you have to find out the criteria by which rights will be accorded. And as I said, if it's being a person, then all unborn human life has no rights, and that's how you get into the fetal farming issue that I discussed earlier,
right.
Growing fetuses for their organs or for their tissue parts or for experimentation. You get into infanticide, which Peter Singer is the most notorious advocate for, and they are now, as we mentioned, doing infanticide in the Netherlands. You get into the idea of people like Terri Schiavo, dehydrated to death as she was, but there are many in bioethics, and I get into this in the Culture of Death book, who are saying that people like Terri Schiavo should become sources of organs. And you can only do that. You can only say that we should be able to create a cloned human fetus and put it in an artificial womb and use it instrumentally like a natural resource if you don't believe in the sanctity of human life, reject human exceptionalism. You can only say that a doctor should be allowed to kill a patient if you don't think that human life has intrinsic moral value. And once you accept the premise that it does not have intrinsic moral value, that the value of human life is subjective, depending on who has the power to decide, well, human rights are gone, by definition. And so there's so much at stake in these issues, and I get into some of these broader agendas, connecting dots, on my blog, which is called Secondhand Smoke, www.wesleyjsmith.com. I've come to think of that blog as so important that I spend 2 or 3 hours a day on it, because you know I can see the full tapestry, and I can start connecting things so people can see that these various seemingly discrete issues are not discrete at all. For example, Sweden just said that gender abortion is acceptable, meaning aborting fetuses because they're female or male, I suppose, but mostly it's going to be female. So in the name of liberating women, you're going to be killing future women. And it's eugenics all over again. It's the idea that there are some lives that have quality that we want and some that we don't. It's the idea that, well, I not only have the right to a baby, but I have the right to the baby I want. And that's the end of unconditional love as well. And I'm sure the Catholic Church should be proud of this, but some of the biggest opponents of eugenics in the 1910s, 1920s, into the 30s, was the Catholic Church. Because of this idea of human equality.
Right.
Of course, the Church has religious views in terms of the person and so forth. But you don't have to, as you pointed out very, very clearly and very truly, you do not have to be a faithful Catholic or a Christian or believe in God at all to accept the idea of human exceptionalism and know that unless human life has intrinsic equal moral worth, that universal human rights are destroyed. That's why Nat Hentoff, who is a civil libertarian and an atheist, stands so strongly with everything you believe in terms of these issues. He was a very a good friend of Cardinal O'Connor, and they worked together to fight for a culture of life, one a very devout Catholic cardinal, and the other an atheist. And again, that shows where people with different perspectives can come together on some of
these
issues.
That's right. And the life issue.
Yep.
That speaks to every individual. It crosses political lines, race lines, ideologies. It's something that every human being should be concerned about. I think the fact that one of the things that I think is portrayed through this compassionate type of wording when it comes to euthanasia, it's that people put it to, well, it's just going to be for these really certain cases that, you know, they couldn't get relief from their pain, or right. It's almost like a merciful thing to do.
Well, that's the way it's sold is, assisted suicide is going to be a last-ditch practice when nothing else can be done to alleviate suffering. And that's how it's sold, but that's a false premise.
It's a lie.
Because there's always something that can be done to alleviate suffering.
I mean, hospice
And we've seen in Oregon that the people who are asking for assisted suicide are not in intractable pain. They are people who have existential agony. That is, they're worried about losing their dignity.
Mm-hmm.
They're worried about being a burden on their family. They're worried about losing the ability to engage in enjoyable activities. These are very serious issues that a loving and compassionate community reaches out to people who are experiencing them and helps them get through it. Instead, in Oregon, if people want it, they're getting poison pills for it. But it's not about pain that can't be controlled.
Right.
It's about this, again, this idea of my body, my life, and killing is an acceptable answer to human suffering, even if that human suffering is relievable and not intractable.
You know, in one of your chapters that I read, talked about, it doesn't matter his name, but his name was Robert, and he was partially paralyzed. And somewhere down on the line, he had a heart problem on top of that. And when they asked him, did he wanted to be treated, when he went into the hospital, did he wanted to be treated aggressively or not? And he said yes. He wanted to be, he was like in his mid, not even, barely 30 years old.
Right.
And because he kept insisting, he wanted aggressive treatment to help him to prolong, you know, not to prolong his life, to give him, allow him to live his life in a viable way. They brought in psychiatrists. Is that not so? Because they thought, how could he want to live if he's partially paralyzed and has a heart condition?
Precisely correct. And right now, and maybe some of your listeners have experienced this, including, by the way, in some Catholic hospitals, if somebody goes in, like an elderly person with a serious stroke, you'll find doctors and nurses and chaplains and social workers arguing, well, don't give that person a feeding tube. Let them go. Their life is over. They'll never get better. And there's a tremendous amount of crass utilitarian thinking that says, well, you know, she's 84, she's had her life, and a lot of people, it's certainly not universal, but a lot of people find that when they want treatment and they want to give grandma that chance to get better, they become perceived as either religious fanatics or guilt-ridden in the hospital, and a lot of pressure is brought to bear saying, do not do this. And I think that the priests need to understand what's happening because, you know, a lot of people still think the old sanctity of life ethic applies universally in the hospitals, and it doesn't. Now, I have to be very careful here. I don't want to say, I want to let people know that the reason that medicine is still primarily ethical in this country are the people who practice in it, the doctors, the nurses, particularly the nurses, the social workers, the chaplains, the priests, the ministers who are in the hospitals. But there is a great push from the bioethics movement to move this idea of a sanctity of human life ethic out of medicine and put in a utilitarian cost-benefit quality of life ethic. And that is a struggle that is happening in many hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people get caught in it, and they go to their priests or they go to their ministers, and the ministers don't believe it's happening. There has to be training here so people do know that it is happening. And the best way to prevent it from happening is to put on the Klieg lights.
Amen.
That is, shine the light of day on it, because then the tendency is to shrink back from trying to force these agendas. These agendas work best in the darkness, and the best way to combat them is to shine light on the situation so that people can receive the proper care that they deserve.
Well, I think this book you've written is so informative. I think if everybody would read this and see the reality of the situation, especially with the administration that is in there right now, we can make a difference. Our voice can make a difference. And if everybody united on these, especially with this new healthcare reform, when our president is talking about he has to get the cost down for health care, he's talking about you and me. And yep. Eventually they're going to make a decision. Is your life valuable?
That's correct. And there are other ways to do it. There are other ways to control costs. And the idea that saying that if you're elderly and you're expensive to care for, your life isn't worth protecting, but if you're 40 years old and vigorous, it is, it's very dangerous because, in fact, there's a great quote from an 18th century German doctor. He said, I'm trying to remember his name. I quote him in the Forced Exit. But if the doctor gets to decide whose life is worth living, he becomes the most dangerous man in the state.
Exactly, and that's my point. That's my point indeed. And one of the things also maybe you could touch on a little bit here is people think that only like the conservatives or only the Republicans or only people that believe maybe with a Catholic teaching, and I'm talking about the teaching magisterium of the Catholic Church teaches the sanctity of life. And if every Catholic knew what the Church teaches and abides by that, they wouldn't have a chance to be able to bring any of this legislation in that could affect suicide, assisted suicide, euthanasia, infanticide, or any of it. And this is a voice. You talk about the silent majority here. One of the things I wanted to talk about, disability rights activists. I have a little grandson who is I love all my grandchildren. I have 40 grandchildren. But every
How many did you say?
I have 40 grandchildren.
Whoa!
And one great-granddaughter, and I have 12 children. However, I look at, and they're all beautiful in each of their own ways. They're the most unique individuals I ever met. And yet, one of them is a Down syndrome baby. And when I
right.
tell you, he's as unique as each one of them.
Of course.
And brings the gift of life and the viability of life. When you watch him and when you listen to him, he loves like no other. And it breaks my heart.
Isn't that the irony that Down syndrome people are prime targets right now?
Yes, they are.
Eugenic abortion, certainly. 90%
yes.
of children with Down are not allowed to be born.
I know. That's.
But if you get to know them, as I have, people with Down tend to be the best human beings I've ever met. If you're going to measure human
value, yeah.
Why don't we measure it based on the ability to love? Why don't we measure it on the desire to be of help and to carry their fair share? Why don't we measure it on kindness? If we measured quality of life under those criteria, people with Down syndrome would be at the top of the list.
That's right.
But we are measuring it based on intelligence. We're measuring it based on looks. We're measuring it based on whether one can live vitally and climb rocks, to use just a little hyperbole there.
Right.
And when you think about what happened with the Sarah Palin situation, the amount of hatred that's been directed at her, I think is in large part, and this is just my theory, but it's in large part, and I covered this on my blog during the election, because she dared to give birth to a Down baby.
I agree. And knew it was going to be a Down
baby.
And
knew that Trigg was going to be a Down baby.
That's right.
And welcomed him and loved him and cared for him and brought him to that convention and treated him as she should have, like a equally loved part of her family. That sent some people ballistic.
I agree.
Because by her action, she never even said anything about whether abortion should be permitted or anything during
That's
the campaign,
right.
really.
Right.
But she lived a certain approach to life, and it set people to the moon. They got so angry. And to me, that explains why she's still the target. How many failed vice presidential candidates continue to be pounded on the way Sarah Palin is?
And where were the women's rights groups for her? There weren't any.
Well, she stood up against the what a lot of people seem to think, that it's not for your quality of life, you shouldn't have a down child because it's difficult. And, of course, it is difficult.
It is difficult.
And but, you know, when did we decide that if because something becomes hard that the answer is killing? And that gets us right back to the assisted suicide
right.
issue, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And, you know, one thing, you know, again, I think an important thing to hit here, a point, disability rights activists, you mentioned earlier that they were overwhelmingly liberal politicians for the most part.
Right.
I'm sure there are some that aren't. And they're the most effective opponents of assisted suicide and euthanasia. Well,
that's right.
Getting together with that, also getting together with these people and beginning to dialogue with them, first off, hopefully they would be open to the truth then of the importance of every life. If they're willing to protect some life, there's something deep within them that respects life. And
but you can't force that on people.
No, you can't force it on them.
Right.
But you can also come together in a common bond what you do believe in. And that doesn't mean join ranks. It means
right.
to join that voice. If they're a voice that's standing so powerfully for against these things, then certainly the Catholic voice should
yeah.
stand up overwhelmingly again and be also most effective opponents of assisted suicide, euthanasia, infanticide, and all the rest.
Well, you know, I don't have a special argument for the Catholic Church, but I think you're right about that. And disability rights activists, frankly, without them, I think you would have about half the states in this country now with legalized assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were able to cut against the stereotype of the opponent of assisted suicide as hardcore right-wing religious theocrats, if you will. Oregon, and I was in this fight when Oregon happened in 1994, the assisted suicide message for Measure 16, as it was called, was primarily an anti-Catholic campaign.
Right.
Where you would have radio ads saying, Pope, keep your hands off my body,
yep.
this kind of thing.
That's right.
And that was before the disability rights activists had joined the fray. That was able to carry the day, 51-49%. At about that time, Jack Kevorkian, you may remember him,
yep.
was assisting the suicide of people, and the media was saying he assisted suicide of the terminally ill. They still say that. That's baloney. 70% of Jack Kevorkian's victims were not terminally ill.
That's right. It was a fantasy. Yep.
Most of them were disabled. The media just never would talk about that. Five weren't even sick based on their autopsy. But yet, Jack Kevorkian was assisting the suicide of women with multiple sclerosis, mainly, and people of that sort, and the society began to cheer. And the disability rights folks saw this, and they said, my gosh, our brothers and sisters are being literally taken out of this life to applause. And that's when they jumped into the fray. The mm-hmm. first thing they did was started a group called Not Dead Yet, to fight this assisted suicide agenda. They picketed Jack Kevorkian's home. They then sat in at the Hemlock Society headquarters in Denver. And Faye Gersh, who was then the head of Hemlock Society, which is now called Compassion and Choices, had people in wheelchairs arrested. And what's made them so effective is that they're very aggressive in their tactics in ways that you might not be and I might not be. But because of being, you know, many of them in wheelchairs and otherwise, it makes for good photo opportunities against assisted suicide.
Amen.
Where before all you saw were pictures of people with cancer saying, all I want to do is die, you now have people in wheelchairs saying, you know, we're not dead yet and we're not going to go down this agenda because we're the targets. And
Amen.
It's been very effective. It has also kept, I must say, the issue of assisted suicide from becoming a National Democrat Party agenda item the way abortion is. Because this is an important constituency generally for the Democratic Party, and because this is a dissenting voice within that progressive coalition, if you will, that has not been able to become, rather than, let's not say a Democratic Party, let's say a progressive political agenda item that then moves in unison. The disability rights folk have kept that from happening, and here in California, that has been why we have not had our radical legislature legalize assisted suicide for this state.
Well, Wesley, it's been a pleasure to talking with you. Great interview. We're out of time. Again, WesleyJSmith.com. Go to the website, get informed, and speak out and stand up for life. God bless you, Wesley.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Bye now. Well, my brothers and sisters, remember, today is Our Lady of Fatima feast day, May 13th. And why don't we commend all of those in our families into the Immaculate Heart of our Mother Mary, that she would take us all and lead each of us deeper and deeper into the life of her Son, Jesus Christ. May God bless you. Remember, you're not alone.